Hey, comedy fans, welcome to another edition of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. I'm your host, my name is Vinny. And joining me in studio for episode 162 is our good friend Jim Florentine. This episode is brought to you by Three Heads Brewing, makers of Rochester's most delicious beer. Remember, drink responsibly, do good things, and always be kind. And by Freshly Brewed Comedy. Comedy at the Carlson Satellite Open Mic at Boulder Cafe and Lounge, 100 Alexander Street. Come see Rochester's best up-and-coming and newest comedians perform all for free every Sunday night at 7 o'clock. And if you show up to watch the show, you will get a pair of tickets to see a show here at Comedy at the Carlson. Let's kick it over to the studio. Hey, good morning, Carlson casters. My guest today has been entertaining audiences around the world for nearly 25 years. Every type of media you can imagine. He's recorded 6 stand-up comedy albums. He's shot 4 full-length specials, hosted 7 seasons of VH1's Classics That Metal Show. I could keep going on. He's the most memorable voice on Crank Yankers, best-selling author, amazing podcast, Everybody is Awful Except You. And you can listen to that wherever you listen to podcasts. Go download that after you listen to the show. His newest special, Bite the Bullet, is available at his website, jimflorentine.com. It's Jim Florentine.
What's going on, man?
Hey, man. Good morning.
Good morning.
I love it when you do
this. I'm not a best-selling author, by the way. Somebody must have put that in. I didn't write that up. I mean, I sold books, but
sure.
It went to number one in one bookstore where I did a signing.
Okay. So
Book Soup is the big place in L.A. where you go do a book signing.
I love how humble you are, but here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to call you best-selling author, and here's why. You were selling books in the back of the room last night. And I saw you sold one. So you were technically the best-selling author in the showroom last night. So I'm not lying.
Technically, yeah. I mean, but there was nobody else selling. Like, if you had a book, you would have probably sold 3, and I only sold 1.
I know.
And then the MC, Brian, if he had a book, he might have sold 2, and I would have only sold 1.
You don't know that.
I don't know that, but anyway, yeah. So it hit, like, number one. At Book Soup in L.A. where I did a signing for the week, like best, like nonfiction or whatever, because I sold a lot of books out of that store as I was doing the signing. But so technically, I hit number one on one little chart in one store somewhere at a bookstore.
Better than most,
I guess.
Stop being so humble.
No, but it's, you know, I don't want people to go,
international superstar Jim Florentine is
international
the show
that
today.
I've never performed outside of, besides Canada. I've never been in another country doing stand up.
Really?
Well, Afghanistan and Kuwait.
I was going to say, you did USO shows.
Right, okay, but I'm just saying, I've never toured Europe, which I always wanted to. Australia, those kind of markets. A lot of American comics are doing really well over there.
I would have to think that you would destroy in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I know. And then even like Europe, the comics are doing really well over there, American comics. I just never had the right promoter or anything like that. I would love to do a 2-3 week tour and just see what happens.
That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And honestly, man, I want to compliment you out of the gate. Your new stuff I saw last night, great. What a good show.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. You know, look, I put the comedy special out like in December, my last one. And then, you know, I'm just building a whole new set from there since then. Because once you release it, obviously, people don't want to see that stuff anymore. There's still some of it in the set. But, you know, you just keep working. I love doing it. This is my favorite time as a comic to build a new set.
Yeah.
Get rid of the old set. Slowly take it out of your comedy set and put new material in.
Yeah, it's an interesting evolution, and it's like it's like kind of like a roller coaster for comics. It's working on new material, new special. All right, I got to go down. I'm having a great time, but now I got to go up the hill again.
And it is frightening in the beginning because you basically, you know, you have a couple bits.
Yep.
You have like 5 minutes that's working of new stuff, and you're like, oh man, what am I going to do? Am I in a rut? Am I ever going to come up with more material? And you don't know. I don't sit down but with an empty notebook and go, all right, I'm going to write every day. I don't have that discipline. When stuff comes to me, I'll say, all right, I'm going to see if I can make this funny, and I'll try it on stage. I go to open mics all the time. I'll do guest sets at local comedy clubs. Sure. I just did one Wednesday night, like at the comedy club near my house, Uncle Vinny's. Like, I'll just go down there and just work on like 7 minutes.
That's amazing.
Meanwhile, I just did 9 shows in Tampa and Orlando the week before. I'm like, did I really need to get on stage? But I wanted to. I'm just, you know, I want to work on this stuff.
I love that. For you, I know this is different for everybody, but like in your creative process, how long do you think it usually takes you to put together an hour of material?
Good 2 years.
2 years, yeah. People don't realize it's a lot of work, a lot of guest spots.
Yeah, 2 years, and then, you know, you take stuff out, and then maybe I'll put it to this. I'll put the bit to the side because I feel like it's not worth. Sometimes if you do it too much, the material, it loses it. It loses the passion, and the crowd can tell. So I want to, you know, you don't want to. I can't do the same jokes for 6 years straight.
Right.
It just I don't feel it. I need to feel, you know. So I'd say good 2 years, and maybe about 2.5 years in, I'll shoot a special.
Yeah, I feel like anyone has to be proud of what they're doing. And the passion being there for you to have new material and enjoying on the enjoyment of the development of the new material is amazing.
Yeah, because I don't know, what else are you in the business for to create? Like, if you're not creating, like, I don't understand these bands that toured. I got these classic rock bands that have the hits from the 70s they wrote years ago, and that's all the crowd wants to hear. To me, it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's great. They know every song, and 20,000 people are going crazy every night. Yeah. But they, you know, they play new material, nobody wants to hear it, or they just don't even play any new songs. So to me, I would, like, if I went around the country and did my greatest comedy hits, I'd be like, just, all right, I guess I'm just going to, for me, mailing it in.
That's what I find interesting. If you were to model yourself after any of those old bands, I would say you're more like the Grateful Dead, where maybe you'll do some old material, but you're going to do a little bit different and make it more fun.
I think so. I mean, I always like a band that does, that mixes it up and plays deep cuts when I go see them.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the last, like, Black Sabbath tour, they got the whole history of songs, and then they played five new songs off that last record that they put out. I loved it, even when AC/DC comes around.
Yeah.
They'll do four or five new songs, and they got such a great catalog, but I'm excited, because I want to hear the new songs, too, as long as they're good. But, you know, so I don't
like... That's always the subjective part.
Right. If they, and, so, you know, usually the bands will have like three or four good songs, you know, still when they put an album out as they get older, which is fine. You know, I don't expect them to write, you know, the master albums they wrote back in the 20s. But see, a comic could do that. A comic could still... I mean, Bill Burr's new special is phenomenal.
So that is on my playlist for this weekend. I haven't watched it yet.
I mean, I saw him doing the material. I opened for him, did some shows with him last summer. And I saw some of the material. But, I mean, the guy's, you know, it's just as good as probably his best special, the one that he put out. And he's already working on... He's doing Fenway Park.
Yeah. That's
in 2 weeks. So he's already got another 45 minutes to an hour because he won't do any of that old material.
In your opinion, is a joke ever finished?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Definitely. I hate when I film a special and I put the joke in there and then I come up with some really funny taglines. And I'm like, damn, I wish I was in the special because I'll still do the bits for a little while. And I'm like, damn, I missed that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes it's just that's what it is.
Okay.
I don't like if a joke's killing, I just keep it. I'm like, all right, it's fine. It's done. That's done. Let me work on something else.
Sure, there's something else to work on.
I can't be that anal about it. It's like, I don't want to make it that complicated.
I feel like some comics, you know, I say you're an artist, Jim, because you love to create. Like you said, why else do you get into this? I think there's two reasons people get into stand up, and I could be very, very wrong. I think one of them is to create because, you know, love of the game. And then the other is ego. I think it's one or the other. The ego, some ego people are very successful, some aren't. The real successful performers are the ones who care about the material and are continuing to develop it and know their style and work towards their style. And you came out of New Jersey, and there's a definite Jersey-style comic from your era, man. Like, you're kind of, how do I put this, like part of a fraternity. There are guys like Norton, guys like Otto, and
Voss,
Levy, all of you guys kind of came out of the same environment. And for a long time, I feel like your voices were so imitated in the comedy world, like that it was kind of insane. Did you ever notice that people were trying to sound like you guys?
Well, I know we had a tough time. Like Voss started before me and Norton.
Right.
And Otto was around too. Otto started around, I guess, at the same time as Voss. But when we started to try to crack New York City, the New York City clubs, we were known as like Jersey white trash. We tell dirty jokes. We're not real comics. We don't do monologue jokes like the New York comics. Every New York comic wore a bad sports jacket and told, like, you know, David Letterman, you know, according to a survey, 56% of women don't have an orgasm, but 44, whatever. They did those kind of jokes, and we were just talking about our lives, our sex, or whatever. So we were always looked down on, like, oh, look at these Jersey white trash. They're not real comics. They're just blue. They work blue and stuff. So we had a tougher time to get in because we weren't respected.
Right.
But once we did, then we broke through. But it was definitely tough for us. We definitely looked down to the comedy club owners, the comics. and all that stuff. But, you know, luckily guys like Colin Quinn went to bat for me and Norton and said, hey, you use these guys, you should put them on stage and stuff. And that's how we got in. But
is Colin Quinn the nicest person in the world?
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's amazing. He's a great guy. I mean, just, you know, the godfather of comedy. You know, so, yeah, I mean, and then, you know, look, I can't put myself in that category of people sounding like me, but definitely Jim Norton. When Jim popped with Opie and Anthony, a lot of guys sounded like Norton. I'd be on the road, and these feature acts would be opening for me. I'm like, oh, my God, this is a Jim Norton Jr. It's the same style. You know, every punch sign was AIDS or hookers or something like that. So I'm like, Jim, there's a lot of imitators out there. He didn't care. He's like, oh, that's a comp, but as long as they don't open for me.
Sure.
He goes, I can't have a guy doing the same thing that I do right before me. But I didn't look at it as so much my voice, but definitely with Voss, you know, that's the kind of style. See, I was more of a Stern guy than an Opie and Anthony guy. Sure. So there was more
well,
real...
You were with the co-host. You were dating the co-host.
Well, yeah, that came later.
Yeah.
But I was more, the Opie and Anthony fans were more comedy, stand-up comedy fans.
I would agree
the
with
Stern
that.
Fans were, to a certain extent, it was almost like a meet and greet. If you were on the Stern show and you did a live show, to like, holy shit, that guy's connected to the Howard Stern show. Especially when he's still on regular radio. He had like 20 million people listening. So that was, I mean, you would sell out every show in a second as soon as he plugged it.
Do you think that maybe Howard... not because of lack of talent or anything like that, but they chose you for their show because you were from that Jersey mold and Norton was doing so well with ONA at the time that they needed that kind of vibe on their show?
No, because I don't think Howard... I think
Opie
Anthony...
that way.
Yeah, I don't think he thought that way. He just took... I did Opie and Anthony a couple times and with Jim, and they started liking me, and then I got an offer to go on Howard Stern. Because I had, like, the, you know, here are my prank calls. And they go, we want you to come in. This is when Jackie the Joke Man left the show. So they're having all these unknown comics sit in the Jackie chair.
Right.
So they said, we want Jim to come in. And I actually sent an email to Opie. I said, Opie, I got an offer to go on Howard Stern. Yeah, I just want to let you know. He goes, I go, I don't know what I should do. He goes, go for it, dude. I'm not going to stop you. Whatever you want to do.
Right.
You know, and he's like, good luck. You know, and then I was like, oh, cool, because I didn't want him to go, oh, man, I felt like I'm doing it behind his back. And then Stern took a liking to me, and I had to take... you know, choose one of the shows. You couldn't go back and forth.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I felt like there was obviously a very contentious relationship back in the day between Opie and Anthony and Howard Stern. Those guys were at each other's throats. Well, behind the scenes at each other's throats. Howard, I don't believe, really ever acknowledged Opie and Anthony on his show, but those guys just trashed on him all the time. And that probably had to be difficult for you because you got a good thing going on over here, and then your buddy's over here on another show.
And we
has
were
a
living
thing
together.
Going on.
We were roommates. We were roommates on the two biggest shows in radio at the time when they were feuding at the height of their feuds. Jim was the co-host, and I was going on like every 4 weeks.
Please tell me you two clowns put like a masking tape down the middle of your apartment, like, Stern Show guys, stay on that side.
No, to me, we didn't care. We're like, hey, man, you know, Jim respected Stern, but Opie and Anthony picked him, and I thought Opie and Anthony were funny, but Stern picked me, and we're like, we just couldn't believe we were on like the two biggest radio shows, and we started selling tickets. We were living in an $800 a month apartment with my girlfriend, so we were splitting the rent three ways, $800, and it went to $900. We're like, oh man, $900?
We're doomed.
That's $300. Of course, I made my girlfriend pay a third of the rent.
Yeah.
Please. She was a school teacher. Like, you got money. We don't. So we're paying.
She's got that school teacher money.
You know,
that's how great comedy was.
I know. She was making 31 grand a year. I go, you're making money. We're not. Yeah. You know, she started at like 31. So we were, to us, we're like, this is unbelievable. And we started selling tickets.
Sure.
And we're like, oh, man, this is unbelievable. So we never like, you know, yeah, I can't believe Opie and Anthony said that about Howard. I'm like, this isn't my fight. This isn't my battle. And Jim's was the same way. We were just happy to be like, you know, that our career started taking off because of these radio shows.
And they ended up with custody of Voss.
Of who?
They ended up getting custody of Voss over at Opie and Anthony.
Well, I don't think Voss ever went on the Stern show.
No, I don't think.
No, he never did. So he started going in. You know, it was weird because it all became because of Andrew Dice Clay. Mm-hmm. Me and Norton were big comedy fans, big, huge fans of Dice.
Mm-hmm.
That's how me and Norton bonded. We liked Dice and Black Sabbath and Ozzy. So when we started doing open mics together,
are building blocks to friendship.
It was because I started a little earlier than Norton, and then I started running an open mic on like a Monday night at some like rock clubs/strip club.
Uh-huh.
And Jim would come down And then we just started talking about Ozzy and Dice. Or like, and then we started doing gigs and, you know, driving together, these long drives. That's all we talked about, and played the Dice shit. And then cut to like 6-5 years later, we're doing this Louis Anderson, had a Louis Anderson comedy showcase. It was on NBC on Friday night. So we got picked to do the show. We auditioned in New York. We had to fly to L.A. The first night we're in L.A., we find out that Dice is at the Comedy Store. So we rush up there, and he's in the back outside at a Comedy Store, and he's talking to Voss. Voss knew him from back in the day. So we go up to him. We're like, we're standing around. We go, we got to get a picture. And I go up to him. I go, hey, Dice, can I get a picture? And he just turns to me. He's like right in my face. He goes, no. I go, come on, man. I can't just get a picture. He goes, nobody tells me what to do. No. And then he keeps talking to Voss, and he turns his head. And me and Norton are standing like, oh, man. And I'm like, and I go, I'm going to give it one more chance. I wait like a couple minutes. I go, come on, Dice. I go, we're comics from New York City, man. We're big fans of yours. We can't just get a picture. And he's in my face, and he goes, yeah, you're a comic from New York? And he's like this far away from my face. I think he's going to punch me. And I go, yeah. And he's like, yeah, I'll take a picture. Come on. Next thing you know, we're taking pictures. Then we tell him how much we like his album where he bombs, The Day to Laugh to Die.
Yep, you know, he's like,
oh, and we're telling him the bits because we knew every bit. He's like, I don't remember saying that. He goes, hey, will you guys go on stage tonight and do those bits for me and my friends? He had a bunch of comic friends. They sat and they go, yeah.
Wow.
He goes, all right. He tells the guy, hey, put these guys on, Jim and Jim. They gave us two microphones and we went up there and we did Dice bits. And him and his friends were in the back dying. The rest of the crowd's just staring at us
like, what the fuck is happening?
They didn't know what we were doing. We just take turns doing these bits. We recorded on a cassette, and then we went in his freaking Cadillac. We listened on the cassette, and he's dying. We're sitting in the car with Dice. He goes, hey, what are you guys doing tomorrow? We go, nothing. Because you want to go shopping? We go, yeah. He goes, I'll pick you up at your hotel like 11. And we're like, he ain't coming. Next thing you know, next morning, he shows up. We go shopping with him. He took our phone numbers, and then Dice was doing like a comedy club in Jersey, Rascals. And he called Norton. And he goes, hey, I need one of you guys to open for me. You open for me, then maybe I'll use Jim down the line. And then Norton opened for me. He took a liking to Norton. And like 2 weeks later, he brings Norton on the Opie and Anthony show. And Jim starts telling all how a degenerate he is. And Opie and Anthony love him, and he gets the gig 2 weeks later. That's how it all happened.
Unreal.
It was amazing, just from us meeting Dice, and Dice brought Jim in. And that's how he got the gig. They go, you got to listen to this guy. He's my opener. He loves hookers, and he started telling these stories. And then a month later, I'm on the Stern Show, because I got the prank calls, and he hears it. I give it to Casey Armstrong. You know, I saw Casey somewhere. I go, Casey, here's my. She goes, oh, this shit's great. I'm going to play it for Howard. And he goes, all right, come on in. And then I, the first day I go in, I sit in the whole day on the show. And he goes, we want you back next week and next week and next week and next week.
Now, what's so interesting here, folks, I know that some of you are younger and don't know this time, or they don't know how massive the reach of these shows were that we're talking about. The Howard Stern Show at the time, how many people were listening? 30 million?
They've been about 20 million in all the markets.
20 million.
When he was on regular radio.
Yeah. We're talking like late 90s.
No, this was 2001.
Okay, 2001.
2002, somewhere around there, yeah.
Okay. 30 million people are hearing your voice. How many people were watching The Tonight Show at the time? You know what I mean? It's on par with each other. They were two kingmakers of shows.
Well, yeah. Well, the Johnny Carson, if you went on Carson back in the day, you saw your career was made. But then when the other guys came, it wasn't as big.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
There was 20 Letterman. People did 20 Lettermans, and they would sell 50 tickets.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You went on a show that like would be the equivalent of the Joe Rogan Experience now. At the time, you were on the biggest radio show that sold the most comedy tickets that could have been out there, and all because you decided to mess with telemarketers.
Mess with telemarketers, and I didn't even know I was on anything. I would my good friend Don Jameson.
Yeah.
So I would sit at home. I was living with Norton at the time, and the phone would ring, and I would just mess with telemarketers because I had like two shows that night at like 10 o'clock at 11:30 in New York. I had nothing going on during the day, so I would just sit there and, you know, mess with them. And then Don's like, I tell him, he goes, put me on three-way. I want to hear this. And I put him on three. He goes, dude, he goes, this shit is gold. I go, you think so? He goes, I'm a Jerky Boys fan. This stuff is great.
Yeah.
He goes, you should start recording them. So I bought a little recorder from Radio Shack. I hooked it up to the phone with an old school cassette, and I started recording them, and I put an album out, and then he started playing it. I remember I used to do the Pittsburgh Improv or the Funny Bone in Pittsburgh. I'd get $500 for the week to feature. Five shows, $100 a show. I would do it like every 6 months. So now cut to, I'm going to be on Howard Stern like on a Thursday and a Friday in like 3 weeks. My agent calls the Funny Bone, goes, hey, Jim's going to be on Howard Stern. You're going to get the plugs because he was big in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Syndicated there. He goes, headline him, because I was already headlining B and C rooms, little shitty firehouses and bars and shit. He goes, give him $1,500 for five shows. And if he sells out, give him a $500 bonus. And the club owner's like, he's not going to sell tickets. I know Howard Stern's big here, but well, you know, I pay him $500. He goes, listen, you're going to get 2 days of plugs on Howard Stern. So the club owner goes, okay, fine. So he plugged it for 2 days. I sold out every show. I walked out with $4,000. I never made more than like $700 on a weekend ever. And I walked out with $4,000.
That's got to be the greatest show in the world.
Sold out every show. Every show was sold out. And then it just went from there. And then every market, I would go to St. Louis. And then I'd go whatever. Then all of a sudden, like, oh, this guy's on Howard Stern. We got to go see him.
That's rarefied air. That's not something that everybody gets to experience. The switch to success in the business that they chose, turning out.
You know,
like
I, yeah, and I was also doing comedy like 9 or 10 years. So yeah. I was around and I was working on my set. I was taking any gig. I still do. A VFW, firehouse, bar, B or C, shitty room. But mm-hmm. I had my 45 minutes. I was ready when I hit. I can headline because I was headlining these little rooms. So it wasn't like I popped up after 2 years and now I got to go do 45 minutes in front of seasoned openers that are going to blow me off the stage.
Obviously, the experience, the 9 to 10 years of writing jokes and preparing, makes that whole situation a lot easier to deal with. But have you noticed that the trend these days in comedy is somebody who has a viral video on YouTube or a TikTok that's, you know, 30 seconds long is now doing like an hour stage show?
Yeah, I mean, look, some of those guys.
I don't knock the hustle,
right? But this, a lot of them will go through a tour once, and people see they don't really have it, and then they won't come back and see him again.
Yeah.
So you get that one time pop, but then you know if you can't bring the goods. Colin Quinn, I think, was said it best. He goes, "You're not a comic till like year nine. You won't even find your voice until you're doing comedy like 9 years."
That makes sense.
That's when you really start. And that's about when I started really hitting my stride as a comic, where I knew, you know, I was confident up there. Just like, you know, I can handle any room and stuff. So, yeah, I always, even from back in the day, I would be like, hey, man, there's 500 cable channels. There's room for everyone. I never got jealous of anyone's success. I'm like, I don't care what this person's doing. I remember this female comic.
Yeah.
Sue Costello got like a sitcom. She was doing comedy like 5 or 6 years maybe, and all the New York comics were jealous. I go, who cares? Right. I go, they weren't looking for you. They were looking for a fucking woman that whatever the show was. I go, you weren't up for that, and she got the role. So why do you care? Like, I never worried about what anybody else was doing. Like, I got to do it on my own. I don't give a shit. To this day, I don't care. I don't care whose podcast is big. I don't care who's selling 20,000 tickets. It doesn't bother me in the least. I got to do my own thing. I don't give a fuck.
I love it. I love it. How's Luke doing?
He's doing great. My kid, he's 11. Yeah, he's awesome, man. He's fucking, you know, it's hanging out with like a bus buddy. I'm taking him to like 5 concerts in August.
Yeah, you told me you're taking him to go see Rob Zombie, Rage Against the Machine.
Ted
you're like
Nugent,
the coolest
Kid
dad
Rock.
On the planet.
Yeah, I was just playing him the first Rage album. He's like, oh, damn. He knows some of the songs, but I go, look, they're going to be playing these songs. I go, so you got to learn them. And he's like, oh, this is awesome. Oh, man, I can't wait. So yeah, no, he loves it too. But you know, he's been to about 20 concerts so far.
Yeah.
But then he also likes hanging with his friends. He plays basketball. He's, you know, I coach his team on Monday nights, his rec team and shit like that. So, you know, he's got a ton of friends. So I'm just letting him be a kid. He did stand up for a little while.
Yeah.
He's only done like one show in the last couple of years. I'm not going to force it on him. Whatever he wants to do.
Sure.
Let him be a kid.
How different would your life have been if you had a daughter?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know. I remember my my ex-mother-in-law.
I'm not going to say the state would get involved, but...
I remember my ex-mother-in-law go, Matt, what would you have done if you had a daughter? I go, I don't know. I mean, my kid was born the same day as me. He likes the same sports teams as me. He likes the same music. We like the same movies. You know what I mean? Like, we just watched the Cloverfield, the two movies. He loves that shit.
That's
all the friggin'
cool.
Taken movies and shit like that. Like, all the same, you know, during the lockdown, especially all the Sandler movies. He's pretty much got the same sense of humor as me, so it's all fucking awesome.
That's really amazing.
Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know what I would have done if I had a girl. I don't know, but I'm fucking happy I got a boy. Usually the guys that are fucking scumbags get stuck with women, girls as kids. I don't know how I slipped through that crack.
It's a life lesson that they
get. Yeah, every guy is like, got three girls. Yeah, well, you deserve it. That's what happened. But I don't know how I slipped out. I got a DNA test. It is my kid, so I don't know fucking how it happened.
Congratulations. I'm glad you cleared that all up.
I finally got a test that I won on.
Hey, we talked about terrorizing telemarketers. I know that Volume 6 came out a few years ago. Is Volume 7 coming anytime
soon? It's
done. It's done?
It's done.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
When's it coming out?
Soon. I think Sirius might have it for a month or two, like an exclusive, and then it's going to be released.
Okay.
To me, it's one of the best ones. Like, I hate when bands say that.
Yeah.
It's definitely up there. It might not be the best one out of seven. I'd say it's probably the second.
Really?
The second or third best one. We worked on this one for a while. I started during the pandemic, the lockdown. I said, you know what? What am I doing? I'm home. So I got my phone, my house phone hooked up.
Yeah.
You know, we did one in like 2000, I don't know, 15, I think was
the
last
one. Yeah, that was the last one.
Yeah, Volume 6. And then I took my phone, my home phone out of the wall. I got construction done, so there wasn't even a cord there. I had to come back. As soon as I plugged the phone in, 7 years later or six years later, whatever it was, the phone started ringing off the hook. It was the same companies calling me 6 years later. I remember it was the same Windows company that I messed with in 2015 or 16. So as soon as I picked up, it was the same company.
They never learn.
They never learn. They just keep calling because they know it's an active number.
Oh, that's hysterical.
So, no, I'll play you some tracks.
Please. I'm begging you. I love them.
Yeah, me and Jameson are just, you know, it's, you know, I started working on it because I'm like, I'm home. I might as well do it.
Right.
I got nothing else going on, so it took a while. You know, we've been doing it since, you know, probably like June 2020. We just finished it like 2 weeks ago.
Amazing. Tell Don hello for me. I love that guy.
Yeah.
Those are so funny, folks. I think the best way to get it is to go to your website, jimquarantine.com.
Or it's on Spotify, wherever you listen. Terrorizing Telemarketers, there's six albums.
I found it on Apple Music the other day.
Yeah.
I found the sixth one just by looking up Jim Florentine. You should be able to find it pretty
easily. Yeah, they're out there, but...
Now, your podcast. I love your podcast. I've told you this. I'm a patron of your podcast now.
Thank you.
I signed up for your Patreon because I enjoy what you do. The show, folks, is called Everybody is Awful Except You. And it's the same title as your book. And the premise of this show is Jim reacting to the stimulus of the world, I think is the best way to put it. Because people just send you things just to get your reactions to them because they're so priceless. You don't like anything that would be in the realm of the term cutesy, do you, Jim?
No, I don't. I never have for some reason. And, you know, it's almost like the audience that listens to my podcast instigates. They instigate me. They know what's going to rile me up. I love doing that. I love riling people up.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I'm like, what's the matter? You know, whatever. I love whatever it is. So now the audience knows what I hate, so then they send in stuff to rile me up that's going to rile me up for the podcast.
Jim, you do like to upset people. You very much do. And my favorite thing about you, and the greatest lesson I think any comedian could ever get from anybody, is knowing how to keep a straight face when you're messing with somebody. For example, yesterday morning, Jim and I went to breakfast, and we walked into a very empty restaurant, and Jim just looked at the woman, very straight face, and goes, is there a wait? And just looked at her, and she was like, what? Like, just what? Like, you just puzzled her.
Yeah. She goes, no, it's fine. I'm okay. I told you when we got to, I go, as long as you don't laugh, they don't think.
You're
messing with them. They just think you're retarded. Like, what's wrong with this guy? There's two people. There's 22 tables open. There's two people sitting at two tables. Why would he say that? He could see that. You walk in, it's wide open.
But that's just what Jim likes to do.
Yeah, I don't know. But it just makes me laugh. I don't know, you know. And then when the bill comes, no matter what, whatever restaurant I'm at, no matter how many people are there, I take a dollar bill out. I go, here. Here. All right, everybody, is this too much?
It's
never not funny. To me, I do it every time.
You're a problem. You're a problem. But this is what translates to this podcast that makes it so interesting and funny. People will send you, for example, their family's Facebook posts of stories that they told about their child. And Jim will just read it and go, that didn't happen. I don't believe it.
Yeah, no, because there's so many people that just make up stories online. Yeah. You know that. You know, and they all do it because they're looking for attention. It's a sickness. You know, somebody sees somebody where they always have to be the hero in the story. And then people see that and they go, fuck, and I got to come up with a story because look at all the congratulations they got. What a great person you are. You're awesome. So now someone else to reading that is go, well, I got to come up with a fake story that I did some noble thing. It usually starts like a lot of them are from the supermarket.
Okay.
I was at the supermarket. I was online. The person in front of me, you know, had to cut three kids and they were crying and the mother went to pay and she didn't have enough money. And I was like, don't worry about it. I'll take whatever the extra is. I'll pay. And I want to pay. It just felt good that I did that. I know the mother's struggling. And then I went out to the car and I even helped to put all the packages in the car.
Right.
You know, you have to stretch it even that. You didn't do that. You didn't. You know what I mean? Like, what you really you took, you know, or the person behind me, whatever she wants, you know, I'm going to pay. Yeah, it's a stop. So it's a sickness that people see. They're all vying for attention. You know what I mean? They all like, hey, oh shit, this person's doing this. Fuck, now I got to do something because look at all the congratulations they got.
It's one of those things where that stuff drives me crazy, and your reactions to it are fantastic.
Because you can figure out, you know, it's a lie.
Right.
You know, it is, you know, I'm going to pay for this person. I'm going to do this. I saw a homeless guy and blah, blah, blah. Now, all right. But why, even if you gave to a homeless person, which is a good thing to do, why do you have to go on Facebook and go, hey, I gave to a homeless person. I felt bad. They were down and out.
Took a selfie with the dollar.
Right. And we already know that homeless people are down and out. Like you posting that isn't going to go, you know what? They're right. I didn't know that the homeless might need some fucking money or some food. That's a good idea. Let me go whip up some fucking burgers.
I thought they were just friendly waving.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know they needed help. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to all of a sudden, like, what's going on? Everyone's friggin' helping out the homeless. There's lines of people waiting to give money. You know what I mean? Like, you're just doing that to brag, and you want everyone to go, you're a good person. You could be a good person without fucking posting it.
Absolutely. I believe the proper term is virtue signaling.
Yes, yes.
It's
sick. It really is because you're not going to start a trend.
Right.
Everybody knows to be nice to people. Everybody knows if you do somebody a favor. We all know that.
I also enjoy, in particular, some of my favorite episodes of your show are reading people's Yelp reviews.
That one drives me nuts. You know, when they leave like a 1-star Yelp review because, you know,
it's all good, Joe. Sorry.
Because the host, you know, because their waiter took a long time to get back to the table.
Yep.
And they didn't get their ass kissed enough. So then when people go and they see the restaurant, it's only got 3 stars, someone that's never been there goes, oh, maybe I shouldn't go there. They're not rated that high. It's because that fucking person, impatient person, you know, made up. And it's always like, it took an hour for the waiter to come back. Did it really? It was an hour? Did you time that? It wasn't an hour, but basically what you're doing is you're fucking with people's businesses is what you're doing. It's almost, I say it on the show. I go, it's almost like a guy that works at a cubicle and he fucks up one day. He fucks up something and he has a really bad day. And someone writes a review of that bad day that he had where he fucked up the whole computer system. The shit was down all day. Everyone had to go home. It really screwed everything up. Imagine if that's there the rest of your life online. So next job that guy goes to at another place, they go, what's this all about? Well, it was just one day. I hit the wrong button. I didn't know. And I can't believe that just because I had one bad day that's still out there. It's fucking, you know, and that's what they're doing in the restaurants.
It's pretty sad because we go from people being like doing the virtual signaling thing is how great a person I am to just crapping on the working man.
Crapping on the working man, exactly. The restaurant, there's barely any room for profit, especially after the lockdowns. Let them get back on their feet. And look, and it's the old adage, if you don't like someplace, just go somewhere else. And if you want to tell your neighbor, yeah, I went to that Italian restaurant, I didn't like it. I thought it sucked. Yeah, really? I'm going to give it a try. That's all you got to do. But now everybody has to have a voice. Anyone that has a fucking Yelp account, you know, and has followers, it's just it's sad.
You know, I feel like there should be reviews for certain businesses. Like, exist for certain businesses. I don't know about restaurants. I don't think I need everyone to be a reviewer. But like yesterday, I'll give you a good example. There was one of the staff here was cooking, and they nicked himself with a knife and needed to go grab some stitches. So I was like, yeah, I'll give you a ride, no problem. And I looked at my phone, and I put in, Urgent Cares. And I was like, okay, let's see which one has the best stars. Like, I feel like an Urgent Care... I like the ratings for something like that.
All right,
but I mean, for a restaurant,
right? That makes sense. Or a roofing company, like if a Roomba company
sure
cost you twenty grand to do your roof, and they fuck it up and it's leaking, I could see that. But yeah, restaurant, it's like okay, I got to kiss your ass. How much?
Yeah, I don't need pettiness for no reason to just factor into my overall opinion of something before I experience it.
And a lot of them are just because they're alcoholics. And they drink at home, and they pour their own drinks. And then when they go to the bar at the restaurant, the drink was so weak, I could barely taste the alcohol. Yeah, because you pour fucking 3/4 of vodka in your drink at home and a little cranberry on top. Sorry they don't do that at a restaurant. You didn't know that?
Yeah.
You know, and the bartender, yeah, I told him it was weak. And he's like, well, that's how I make the drink. And, well, I'm never going there again. It's a self-entitlement is what it is.
Yeah.
You better, you know, and meanwhile, you don't know what mood they're in. If they're in a bad mood, they get in a fight with their, you know, wife or husband in the car and a waiter at a restaurant, mm-hmm. and they're in a fucking shitty mood, and they're going to take it out of the restaurant. I mean, just that you go to your phone after you went to a restaurant, I got to put a bad review. I mean, that's sad. But you don't know what mood they're in. If they're in a shitty mood and they go in and everything's going to bother them, you know what I mean? And then they give a restaurant.
At that point, they're a terrorist to your business.
They are. They really are. You know? And I hate when the owners respond, I'm sorry. If there's anything we could do, fuck it. Just tell them to fuck off. I love the reading the Yelp reviews where the restaurant goes, no, you know, it's sorry. You know, too bad. Sorry to, you know, the burger was undercooked. You know, and we brought another one back out in 3 minutes. Like, I love when they go back at them instead of kissing their ass.
So if you want to hear these wonderful things, you can hear them all for yourself.
Yeah.
Jim's assault on virtue signaling is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Everybody is awful except you. And check out the Patreon. You get some cool bonus episodes every week. I'm glad I signed up.
Yeah, I do one free on Monday, and then I do 3 other ones. So I do 4 a week.
Yeah. It's good to keep you grounded. That's all I'm going to say. It's good to keep you grounded. Check out the podcast. So
it's not for everyone. I get it. You know what I mean? People like that guy complains too much. But people, like I said, they instigate. They egg me on. What I see last night on the menu that annoyed me.
I don't know. What did you see on the menu that annoyed you?
Remember, I turned it on. It said mocktails.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I'm going to talk about on Monday instead of a cocktail. Because it doesn't have alcohol in it. I just that word just annoyed me.
Mocktail.
And it's still bothering me.
It's just a letter off. It's cute.
So it's mock, meaning it's not really?
Yeah, it's fake.
Oh, yeah.
Fake tales.
I didn't. Oh, yeah, I get it.
It's good.
Yeah, it's great. Just, I saw like something
all right,
that little.
All right.
But you know what? I won't walk around with it all day. Like people, I'm like, I just get it off my chest and
it
I move on.
It says mocktails. She just says mocktails. He's not doing that, folks.
But it's just like, all right, so, okay, so I get it. It's cute. It's one word off. The abbreviations, all that other stuff. You know, the smiley faces. Everybody puts a stupid joke on Facebook and puts like 17 smiley faces or puts a, you know, it's like that's their laugh track, I call it. Like that's their cue. Like on a goofy sitcom, they put the laugh track. We're supposed to laugh here.
Okay.
So the little fucking, you know, yellow smiley face at a laugh track. No, you're supposed to laugh here. Yeah. I just made fun of one yesterday. Woman goes, I don't know if you guys know about the new Amazon scam out there. My husband went on Amazon and he said he bought me expensive jewelry and motorcycle parts came to the house. And surprisingly, they fit his motorcycle.
Mm.
And then the 17 smiley faces. The joke. You get it? Because he didn't really get the...
He lied. My husband lied to me.
And he, yeah. It's an Amazon scam.
Mm.
Ooh. Like, what made you to post that? For what? You're not a comic. You know what I mean? What were you going to get out of it? You're looking at your phone. Oh, look, I got another like. Oh, I got another like. Oh, this is awesome. Oh, people are really liking this one.
Oh, Debbie thought it was hysterical.
Oh, it
office.
Didn't get as many likes as the last one I did, so shit, I better come up with a new one.
What a world we live in, folks. The thorough examination of social media and how it's used by the layman on Jim Florentine's podcast.
Those Facebook games, when they come up with the games.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, like some song lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Prince was whatever, fill in the blank, whatever. You know,
blank beret.
Yeah, something like that or whatever.
Blank
whatever they do.
Beret.
And you know, they go ready, go. No cheating, go. No cheating. What are you gonna do if I cheat? What are you gonna do if I look up a Prince song?
We're gonna alert the board.
How are you gonna know if I cheated? And then they always go, ready, go. Like someone's going to go, I see this Facebook game. Yeah, I want to participate, but he didn't write go. So
I'm going to sit here and wait and stare at the first question.
I guess I got to wait. Fuck, I'm going to keep refreshing Facebook. He didn't say go. Just little things like that.
Everybody is awful. Except you.
Except you. So it's not you. I'm just saying everybody else is.
Yeah.
So don't take it personally.
Unless you're the lady who made that post about the motorcycle parts. Then
is that funny? Did you find that funny, Vin? Would you do
no,
that?
Jim, I didn't. Jim.
Would you do that joke on stage?
No, I don't think I would.
Me and Jim Norton did a sitcom for, we had a pilot for VH1. And this was back in like 2000.
Okay.
And it was so bad. And we did it like a table read with the other actors. We told the director, hey, listen, could we bring this stinks. I go, could we bring this on stage and read this on a comedy stage and see if we get any laughs? Because then we'll know if it's funny. The guy's like, no. I go, no, seriously, let us read this because this is terrible. Yeah. And it was. It never got picked up. It was terrible.
What was the name of the show?
Couch Potatoes.
Ah.
We did a pilot episode.
Couch Potatoes.
It was a bunch of different people in the same apartment complex in different apartments in the same complex watching music videos and commenting on them. But there's always like a story going on. So me and Jim were roommates.
Okay.
So we were just sitting there making fun of videos. Not kind of like Beavis and Butthead, but there was always something else going on.
Sure.
Then they cut to the married couple that was in the apartment complex, the gay couple that had to throw the gay couple in, of course.
Sure.
And then, you know, somebody else or whatever like that. So
it's all these different people's perspectives on music videos.
Yeah, and they're all watching the same video cut into it or whatever. But anyway, but getting back to that post about the motorcycle parts, if you tried that tonight at the show at the Comedy at the Carlson, would anyone laugh at that?
I don't know, but I'm going to give it to McBride to open with. I'm going to write it down
for
him right now.
I love him.
I do, too.
Oh, yeah. It was great. We had some great conversations in the green
room. Did we mention that there are four more shows here tonight? Well, there's two tonight and two tomorrow at Comedy at the Carlson. I'll be your featurette. Jim Florentine, of course, your headliner. And our good friend Brian McBride will be your MC.
There's nothing better than like green room banter, like we're just hanging out and just busting balls.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what we're doing.
Brian's a lot of fun.
Brian's great. Yeah.
He's great. He is great. So grab your tickets at carlsoncomedy.com. And Jim, thank you for your time this morning, dude. It's always good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
I always appreciate you, man. And these are going to be fun shows, so don't miss them this weekend.
Hey, look, a fellow Dolphin fan living up in upstate New York.
Fins up, baby.
I hate that.
Hate the fins up?
Yeah.
Why is that?
It's terrible.
It's not the worst.
No, and it is. Well, a Dolphin, they used to be called instead of Dolphins.
Yes, I never liked that.
Dolphins.
Yeah.
No, fins up stinks.
You think fins up stinks?
It stinks.
Well, what do you think it should be?
It could be worse than the Dolphin, Miami Dolphins song.
Which one?
Miami, whenever they score a
Miami
touchdown.
Has the Dolphins, the greatest football team.
Yeah,
they move the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. They're in the air. They're on the ground. They're always in control. And when you talk Miami, you're talking Super Bowl. Well, maybe they'll host it.
I used to go to Dolphin games down in the Orange Bowl, whatever, the Marino days,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, or just any Dolphin. They'd be down 34-0, and they would score a touchdown, like with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and they put that song on. I go,
every time they kicked a field goal.
They're 2-11. They're not going to the Super Bowl.
Jim?
They just scored a late touchdown where the defense was playing 20 yards off the ball, and fuck fins up. That stinks.
Does not.
It defends.
I like fins
what,
up.
What, fins? Because it's a dolphin, they got a fin.
Yeah.
So up.
Fins up. Let's go.
Let's go.
It's like a rally cry. Fins up. Let's go. What's better? You got something better for dolphins?
Did nothing. Just be a fan.
Okay.
Just be a fan.
I'll try
that. Go to the fucking Dolphin game. I can't wait. I hope they kick the fucking ass of the Jets. I don't want fins up. I don't want dolphins. It's terrible.
It's like fan code, though.
The Chargers got a bad one, too. Bolt up.
Huh? Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Ours is better. Fins up versus bolt up.
What?
I'm taking fins up.
What? Because the Chargers is a bolt on that
lightning
helmet.
Bolt. Yeah.
So bolt up?
Yeah.
Is that going to make that team do any better?
Yes, it will.
Are you going on
psychologically?
Sunday, when they're playing the Bills, the Dolphins and Bills this year, and you write, come on, Dolphins, 10 minutes before game time, and you put on Twitter, fins up. Is that going to make them play better?
I want you to know that this particular NFL season, before every game, I'm going to be tweeting and texting you fins up. I just want you to know that. You just earned it.
I'm going to block your number. I'm going to fucking block your number.
I don't blame you.
I will if I see fucking fins up. My kid did that once. I go, don't say that. He goes, what? I go, listen, don't say that. I know you're 11. And he's like, you're right, you're right. He doesn't like that corny shit either.
Okay.
I had to send him a text the other day, and I was like, his team is like Go Up Strong or whatever, his basketball team.
Uh-huh.
And I dictated, I did it in a fucking voice thing, and it put up a fucking muscle after strong. Yeah, and I was like, and I was driving, I'm like, I'm not going to fix it. So I just sent it to him. He go, and he just wrote back, there's no reason to put a muscle in this text.
He's your son.
Yeah, he's
you
great.
Didn't need
he,
that test.
He got annoyed by that.
He did not need a test. That is your kid.
Yeah, he goes, 100%. First, he goes, you have no muscles, so why would you put that in there? That's what he said to me when he saw me.
All right, well, there's four more shows this weekend. Comedy Up.
Comedy Up, yeah.
Comedy Up this
Comedy
weekend.
Comedy Carlson Up.
Oh, Jim just looks so mad.
Fucking yuck.
We'll be back next week, folks.
I'm so upset. I'm going to go have a mocktail.
Why don't you? We'll see if we can pour you a Fogarita.
What's it?
It's like a fake margarita. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure that's one of the words. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to come up with them.
I just saw some woman post it. We went out and with friends and we had mocktails. And I was like, the fuck is that? And then I saw it on the menu. I'm like, that's what that is.
Secondly, those aren't your real friends.
No, she said she went out. Yeah,
for mocktails with her friend. They're not your real friends if they're not at least drinking some real alcohol.
Right, I know. Yeah, that's a fun conversation.
They're acquaintances.
Yeah, four people drinking fucking
Kool-Aid
fake booze
with fruit in it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure. I wish I had a recording of that conversation.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have a fine selection of mocktails here at Comedy at the Carlson. They're on the back of the menu. Feel free to check those out when you come.
Everybody drinks in Rochester.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have that. Someone that just came out of rehab is going to go, I'll just take a fucking Coke. You know?
Can I have a club soda, please?
Yeah, some guy that was a fucking, got three DWIs and spent 3 years in prison is not going to go, hey, can I see the mocktail fucking menu?
Can you give me a Kool-Aid in the fanciest glass you have? I'm done. We'll see you guys next week here on the Carlson Cast. Don't forget to subscribe. And rate and review jimflorentine.com and check out Everybody Is Awful Except You wherever you listen to podcasts. And most importantly, get your tickets this weekend at carlsoncomedy.com. Act Right Rochester, Comedy Up. We'll see you at a show. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review.